This is former Razorback kicker Zach Hocker. You're listening to The Morning Rush.
Welcome back into The Morning Rush. Let's go to the phone lines and welcome in one of the deadliest kickers in the history of Razorback football with a career 77 field goal percent. Zach Hocker now joins us on The Morning Rush. Zach, thanks for making some time for us this morning, man.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. I appreciate you guys having me on.
So, Zach, we had Drew Morgan on a couple weeks ago, and we talked with him. He looked like he was headed to A-State at one point, which is where you were going initially as well. Take us back to the events leading up to National Signing Day, you getting the offer and ending up in Fayetteville.
Yeah. Well, that was a really wild time, and at the end of the day, I'm very thankful that I got to play at Arkansas, but also very thankful for Arkansas State that they trusted me and gave me a scholarship offer pretty early. And so I was committed to play at Arkansas State. And leading up to signing day, it was always in the back of my mind that I wanted to be a Hog. And I got an offer essentially the day of signing day from Arkansas. And I'd let them know that if they had a spot for me, I was definitely coming. And they made a spot for me, there's no looking back after that. Right before signing day, I'd gotten an offer from the University of Hawaii, of all places. I had never talked to them before. It was a really random deal, but if I was going to be able to go and visit Hawaii and at least go check it out and meet the staff, I was going to do that. And that was just maybe 5 days before signing day. And ended up going out there for right at a week and meeting the staff. Ultimately, did not take the offer. You know, at this point, the Arkansas deal wasn't on the table. And I walked out of there and I had the best time ever and didn't really know if I was going to regret that decision or not by not taking that opportunity. But I was on a red-eye flight back to California. And when I landed, I had a voicemail from Arkansas saying they were going to offer me, and I flew right into Arkansas and went to my high school and signed away, and that was it. But pretty crazy story.
How did Hawaii find out about a kicker in Russellville, Arkansas? That's got to be an interesting story.
I have no clue. I would do these camps where I would go around and I would kick, and they'd be catching all of the country there trying to showcase and try to get offers, but I had never talked to them ever. And so it was definitely a cold call and I had no idea what to expect, but they wanted to bring me out there and they ended up offering me. And they told me the second that I walked out of those doors, they were going to offer a kid, out of LA. And so, there's kind of some pressure there for me to make a decision. And I did, I loved the coaching staff and I loved everybody there, but it was just, it was a gut feeling of mine that I needed to hold off and come back home. And thankfully I had an offer from Arkansas on the table when I got back home. So it all worked out, but very thankful to be back in Arkansas.
Zach, you come in and as a true freshman, you start, and I know that Alex Tejada was there and some other guys, but how nerve wracking was it as a true freshman to start? And man, were you a little surprised that you started that early in your career at Arkansas?
Yeah, like I said, I'm very thankful that I had the opportunity to play as a freshman. It was pretty nerve-wracking. I heard before the intro this morning on the radio, one of my interviews from a long time ago when I was playing, and I think I mentioned something along the lines of playing in front of 70,000 people, and it was definitely a little bit of a culture shock going from Russellville to Arkansas, within a year's time there and being able to play. But we had a great team at that time and great guys around me to help us have a pretty successful freshman year. So it was nerve-wracking, but I had all the confidence in my other guys and it was definitely a fun year for sure.
How much of it is leg mechanic or just mechanics, leg strength, and then how much of it's mental?
I would say 99% of it's mental. There are a lot of players out there that can, they have the talent, and it's just, it's being able to get over that mental hump and zone everything out and just be locked in that moment. But I will say that's not very, that's not very tough to do when you're out there and the adrenaline is pumping out of your chest. And like I said, you kind of black out there, you know, when you walk in. It is kind of tough to take in the bright lights and see all the people whenever, you know, you have a goal in mind here and you've got the next 30 seconds to get it done. But as far as being able to bounce back from a miss or just kind of get over mental adversity to come back and still be an asset for your team is definitely tough to do. And, you know, I admire the guys who have great college careers and are able to play in the NFL for, you know, 10 plus years, because those are the guys who are really special and can truly block out the noise on, you know, at any given time and be able to come back and still make big kicks for their team.
Yeah, it's kind of like a quarterback throwing a pick or particularly pick six. You got to block it out. Who are the bigger head cases, kickers or quarterbacks on the team?
Well, I wish I could put myself in a quarterback's shoes, but I definitely can't. But I can speak on behalf of the kickers, and I can say even myself, you know, during my NFL career there, you know, I was bouncing around from team to team, and when I did finally make a team, you know, I was still feeling like I was going to keep on bouncing around, and I still hadn't fully made it yet. And so for me, I was a head case because I knew there were, you know, there's a long line of guys waiting to take my spot as soon as I messed up. Right. And that was definitely on me to not have that, you know, I did not need to have that mindset, but that was a tough hurdle for me to get over when I was bouncing around. But, and I would say, you know, I'm not going to put kickers in front of quarterbacks by any means, but it is easy to get in your head and to get into a slump. And, you know, everybody wants to compare it to golf. You just got to, if you have a shank, you got to come back that very next one and keep your head down and stay focused and get it done.
We're speaking with former Razorback kicker Zach Hawker here on The Morning Rush. Zach, when you were in school, whether it was Dennis Johnson, whether it's Joe Adams, whether it's you, there was a heavy emphasis on special teams and the talent that you guys had. You were accurate as it gets. I know you had that little junior year blimp where you weren't as accurate as you were the other years, but I mean, there was just an emphasis on special teams while you were in school. How important were the coaches that you had, particularly in John L. Smith, helping the special teams get to where it was?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, number one, you're right. You listed a couple of names there. We had a lot of fun guys to watch on the special teams unit. I know the other day, you know, Joe's punt return resurfaced, I think, on social media, and it was cool to go back in that moment to watch him do that. But yeah, John L. He absolutely did play a huge role in our success. And the way I tell people about John L., he was, you know, the breath of fresh air whenever times were tough on the field or you were in a weird, you know, situation, you had to go execute a play or a kick or something like that. And, you know, obviously Bobby was pretty high strung and you know, wanted us to do well, but he also kept you on your toes playing and would put it in, you know, put the situation in perspective for you pretty quick. And John L. was just kind of the happy medium of approaching us, joking around, to kind of bring it back down to normal level, get us focused again, and let us know that he trusted us before we went out there and took the field. So it was definitely a fun balance of staying focused and knowing that we had to get our job done here, but also have fun, go out there. You can do this. You've done it before. Go make a play. So that. I definitely enjoyed him as our special teams coordinator for sure, and I think most guys on the team who played with me at that time would definitely agree with that.
Zach, do you have a favorite John L. Smith story?
Oh man, I've got a lot of them. Let me think here. Well, I don't know how many I can tell on the radio, but his commentary and his demeanor amongst all the guys. He was just, I mean, he was a really fun coach to be around all the time. He was joking around with us and you could tell that he truly cared about his guys. But no, there's a long list of John L. stories that I'll keep in the books today.
Zach, but, John L. had the title of special teams coordinator. Arkansas had many teams that didn't have a special teams coordinator. A couple years ago, they added the 10th assistant, didn't have one immediately. Now, Sam Pittman has added a role of a special teams coordinator and has that with Scott Fountain. How important is that? And as someone that spent a career as a specialist, what do you think having a coach dedicated to coordinating special teams brings, and give the audience some perspective on the value of that, particularly as a specialist, having someone that kind of puts their arms around special teams, how that can lift that third of the team?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is really crucial. I know a lot of teams go the route of assigning position coaches to certain tasks within special teams, I guess, whether it be the punt return guy or the punt team guy or the kickoff guy. I've had it both ways. I will say that I definitely do think that it's more it's way better having a guy strictly designated to the entire unit. Just because, to your point, you have a guy who is truly dedicated to the special teams unit, and I feel like sometimes special teams is overlooked. But when you do have a coach, who's the head honcho there, and over the entire unit, it does bring some sort of unity and camaraderie there amongst the guys who may not be a huge asset on strictly the offensive side or a huge asset on the defensive side, but they're part of our unit. And when you have a coach really breaking down players and instilling the importance of what we have to do in that moment, I feel like is pretty crucial. And you know how dedicated they are at that time and making us successful. And you only have typically special teams one play to go out and make it happen. And it is refreshing to know that you have a coach who is emphasizing the importance of this one play in this one moment, and a guy you can go back to at any moment to fix things or to know that he has your best interest. So I feel like that it is. And I do like that setup way more than necessarily, divvying out the jobs amongst the position coaches.
Ty was talking about Dennis Johnson. We remember Joe Adams' punt return. It seems like when Bobby was there, some of your more high-profile skill players, particularly in offense, were a part of special teams. Is that the key to Arkansas having special teams? Arkansas has never had tremendous team depth in a lot of places. For Arkansas to have great special teams, do you need to play some of your frontline players in the key spots consistently? I mean, what does Arkansas need to do? What's the key ingredient to having great special teams at Arkansas?
Well, I definitely think it's exactly what you said. I'll never forget when we were, it is kind of sad, but a lot of guys who are big time players on either one side of the ball or the other, they don't want to be a part of special teams just because they are exerting a lot of effort and focus and energy other places. But it definitely does help when you have guys who are super talented step up and want to take a position on the special teams unit. And I'll never forget when we were playing Alabama, every year we would break down who their frontline guys are on kickoff team. And it'd be, Trent Richardson, or it'd be, like the big name guys that they had who are making a huge impact on one side of the ball or the other were also the starters on the special teams unit. And I feel like that wasn't coincidence of why they were so good at every phase of the game. And still are. So I truly believe that is crucial to have your talent and a lot of your frontline guys, whether it be offensive side or defense side of the ball, step up and want to take a spot on the special teams unit and go make it happen.
Zach Hawker with us here on the Morning Rush. Zach, you brought up Alabama. I want to go back to that game. You're a true freshman. It's 2010. Bama's coming to town. In that year, in that moment, did you experience a better atmosphere than Alabama in 2010?
Man, that was a really cool time to be a Razorback for sure. Because we were we're on the up and up, and we were really pumped about that game. I don't think I've heard our stadium louder than that first wheel route that Mallett threw to Wingo and scored that touchdown. That was the loudest I think I've ever heard Razorback Stadium. But really fun time to be on the team, and we were pretty close to sealing that one up. But as far as the atmosphere goes, that's definitely top of the list when it comes to games in Fayetteville, for sure. It was a great time. The kids are out, you know, all the students would camp out before the game, and we'd go out the night before to show our support for them and hand out pizzas, and you could just feel the energy in Fayetteville everywhere before that game, and that definitely boosted us to go in and try to do our best for them. But that was a really fun time for sure.
Zach, if you look at 2010, 2011, you guys lost to Alabama. You lost to Auburn, who went on to win the national championship. You also lost mm-hmm. to Ohio State, who was a BCS team at the time. And then you lost the following year. You lost to the two national championship competitors, Alabama and LSU. If you had to pick the year, 2010 or 2011, which team do you feel like had the better shot of winning a national championship?
You know, 2010 was an eye-opening year for me because it was just my first year to play. But there's just something special about the 2010 team that we all felt really good about. You know, we ended up playing in our first BCS game down in the Sugar Bowl. But it was really cool coming into 2011. For the most part, still maintaining a lot of our guys and a lot of our talent, and just rolling that momentum over it into the next season. And Tyler obviously taking over at quarterback, and I really don't know. Both seasons were we made a pretty good run at it. I will say, because we did have such a great year in 2010, our vision for being able to make a national championship became more real going into 2011 because we know that we could get there. So I would say that, 2010, we were a really, really good team, and there's something special about it. But just because I feel like we could feel it within an arm's reach in 2011, knowing that we already proven ourselves the year before that we are good enough to compete with these guys, I would say 2011 was probably, the year that we could see it happening in front of us. But both teams, talent-wise, I feel like did not outweigh one or the other. Both of them were great teams, and we both got to play in really cool bowl games against great teams, Kansas State and Ohio State. So really fun years for sure.
Were there any games where you got iced, where the other team was calling timeouts or maybe called multiple timeouts, and you had to go to the sideline? Because I would love to know what Bobby's jokes were, or what was the interaction, because he doesn't seem like a joking kind of guy. I'd love to know what was his way of relaxing you, because he didn't seem like he had a relaxing mode to him. Was there ever that moment? I can't remember a game offhand, but what was that like?
Yeah, there are a handful of times that I got iced, and I'll be honest with you, I think Bobby and I understood that if that situation ever did happen or if the kick was coming up, we did not talk. if we were going to give ourselves a chance to make this, it was going to be best that he do his thing.
He didn't bring the tension down, did he? He didn't have a way of calming things, did he?
Right. But if you went out and if you weren't successful or if the kick did not go in, you would definitely know about it. And you would just go ahead and be able to, Just mentally prepared for the gut check you were about to have on the sideline. But it's as far as prior to the kick, going out and having to execute something like that, we both had a mutual understanding that we were not going to talk before that. And that's how it was when I played it, underneath him, whether it be, a pressured kick that we were getting iced at or just your average extra point, he and I, we didn't speak much during the games. Unless obviously he needed to get onto me for something,
Zach,
which was probably more so than it needed to be, but it is what it is.
Okay, so on that note, Zach, 2010, yeah. You're a true freshman on the road in Starkville, one of the most intimidating atmospheres that you can go into. What did he say after overtime in that game? Do you remember?
You know, that was a man. You're bringing it back up, man. That was a that was definitely an eye opening game for me. And when I missed that kick in overtime. I will say Bobby was definitely upset and gave me a few words. I can't really remember what the words were. they probably weren't anything that we could talk about today. Yeah. But,
well, thanks for filtering them. We appreciate that here on live radio.
Yeah, absolutely. But I will say what was really cool about that, I'll never forget Ryan came over and was like, "Hey man, I've got you on this deal." And I had a handful of the players come over and say, "Hey, you know, this is going to be all right. I've got you." And sure enough, you know, whether I wanted to believe in that moment or not, and I really was down on myself, the guys came out there and pulled it off, and I'm very thankful that they did. Because we had a good game going into that moment, and I was really confident. But that was my first true test of making a big kick in the SEC, and I learned from it, and we ended up moving forward, but thankful that we had a good team behind us that could go out and still get it done.
Zach, let me top off the interview with this, man. We played your intro. It's got you voicing and obviously saying you're listening to Morning Rush, but that was you playing guitar on the road in about a minute or less. You still playing guitar a little bit just here and there?
man, I'm playing a little bit, during the quarantine phase that we're all in right now, you have a little bit of downtime, So I am still playing a little bit, probably not as much as I'd like to, but that's definitely a hobby that I do enjoy, and I'm not going to say that I'm any good at it, but I do enjoy it, kind of like my golf game. I'm not any good, but I am there to have fun doing it. So
just a good excuse to drink beer.
that's exactly right. Exactly right.
Just like golf, a good excuse to drink beer.
No doubt about it.
That's how it
and you can't lose golf balls playing the guitar.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, golf is a little bit more expensive than playing a wrong note. So,
Former Razorback kicker Zach Hawker with some good stories this morning. Zach, we really appreciate you making some time for us on the Morning Rush, man.
You got it, guys. Thank you so much for having me on. You guys have a good day.
All right, thanks.
You too, man. Great stuff from Zach.